This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Welcome to today's ILTA podcast entitled Common Security Worst Practices. Today's podcast is an abbreviated format of the very successful ILTACon session that took place earlier this year. I am Corey Wrights, a cyber assurance architect at Sandia National Laboratories, and I will be your moderator today. I'm thrilled to be joined by our incredible panel of speakers, which include James McKenna, Chief Information Officer at Fenwick & West, Mel Gates, Senior Legal Editor, Privacy and Data Security at Thomson Reuters, Rebecca Satin, Chief Information Officer at WorldDocs, Robinson Roca, Practice Lead Infrastructure Services at Heliant Systems, LLC, and Heather Morrow, Director, Project Management and Training, Loeb & Loeb, LLP. Welcome to everyone. Our format will be a round robin style, giving each of our panelists roughly 5 minutes to share the absolute worst mistakes that they have seen in the area of cybersecurity, in the hopes that all of us can learn and become better stewards of the data that we protect. Let's get started now by hearing from Mr. Jim McKenna. Jim.
Hi, Corey. Thank you very much for the introduction. The concept that I would like to share as a great mistake, and it is so easy to do, is the idea that once you get things working well, to quote unquote, not touch it. And we have a couple of conflicting drivers in our universe, you know, one of which is operational reliability and stability are highly prized, particularly in law firms. And it's also fair to say that there is never a great time to force a person to reboot their computer. But we live in a world that is not only changing, there's also bad actors out there and there are threats. And oftentimes, particularly with things like zero-day exploits or when you see somebody else have a problem and you recognize that you can take action to prevent it from happening at your entity, you have to have the ability to not only protect your place of employment, but also have the ability to make that change happen in real time or near time and such. So the concept that I'm trying to convey to people is that just because things are working well, they won't stay well. Establishing a cadence, a pattern, and also the institutional inertia around regular monthly patching is critical. Having the reputation and the trust of your entity so that you can do something on an emergency basis quickly when it's necessary. Now, you don't want to do that often, but you do want to do it as often as necessary. There's a difference between those two. And not being afraid of the fact that sometimes when you have a person who reboots their computer, they may have a problem. They may have an inconvenience. They may have lost a particular tab on an internet browser that was, you know, critical to them in the moment. Clear communication about what you're doing and why. Having the respect of the institution that you're doing the right thing for your firm or your employer and not being afraid to pull that trigger is absolutely critical. And to summarize, if you don't patch, you're setting up tomorrow's problem. And if you can get people used to the idea that they will be rebooting their computers or systems, at least on a monthly basis, will be patched and maintained, you will go further, farther, easier, and over the course of time, receive far less feedback than if you just get your operations to the point where it's working now and I'm afraid to touch it. Thank you very much for it.
Thank you so much, Jim. Those are great points. It's always difficult to balance the mission of the organization with those necessary patches and other steps that are needed to ensure good cyber hygiene. Now turning over to Mel Gates. Ms. Gates?
Thanks, Corey. And as Corey mentioned, I'm currently a senior legal editor, which means I write for and help other lawyers understand privacy and data security. Before that, I was in private practice, including responding to data breaches and providing legal counsel there. And before that, I spent a little over 20 years in the operational world, including being a CISO. Reason I point all that out is not just that I've been around the block, but that I've seen a lot of bad things happen to good data and IT infrastructure. And I've sat on a lot of different sides of the table. And one of the worst practices I've seen is really one of perspective. And I call it the despair issue. It's throwing up your hands in despair as an individual, as an organization, as a program, because darn, cybersecurity is just too hard. The threats are always changing. There's another big event in the news. and it's just too much. Well, that's really not going to help you maintain a security posture. And so what I offer instead is change your mind, shift your perspective, recognize first that we're all just as smart as the bad actors, maybe even smarter. They are very opportunistic and very persistent, which means you need to think of cybersecurity as an ongoing program and set of processes. It is not a point A to point B project. It is not developing version X.Y of a particular software package. It's an ongoing cyclical part of your world. Thinking of things this way and recognizing that this is how we want to build our programs, this is how we want to reward people, really makes a tremendous difference. Recognizing it's not going to be done. And it's also a pretty good day when things are kind of quiet. Not that that ever happens, but it's a bit of a goal. And so it's a very different kind of thinking, I think, for a lot of IT folks and technical people. And so it also begs the question, how to start? And I would offer that how to start really plays into what you just heard Jim talk about, and that's building a strong vulnerability management program. That means understanding your hardware, your software, the data that you have. I can't protect things if I don't know what they are and where they sit, and I'm ready to patch them, and I'm ready to keep up with them as the business and the technology environment changes. People forget that cybersecurity risk is built out of threats and vulnerabilities. And so again, the one thing I would like to see organizations do is focus on that vulnerability side of the equation, because that's what we can control. That's the window we can close. And that's how we can make it a lot harder for the bad actors to get to us. Thanks.
Great comments, Mel. Thank you so much. What I took away from that at a high level is that really cyber is a marathon and not a sprint, and that we got to continue to do everything we can, not throw our hands up in the air, but just take it one step at a time and keep improving. Thanks so much. And now moving to Ms. Rebecca Satin from WorldDocs.
Thanks, Corey. Very much like Mel, I spent many years in law firm IT before I joined WorldDocs, and both in that capacity and in my capacity working with our existing customers at WorldDocs, one of the things that I see, and this builds a little bit on what both Jim and Mel said, is that if you don't understand where your data is and its sensitivity and its importance, then you can't really develop a good risk management program. So along those lines, you not only have to understand where your data is, but you have to understand how long to keep it on your system, because the longer you keep the sensitive data on the system, the more data you have to protect. And it's always better, you know, if you no longer have to be responsible for protecting it, then that's less data that you have to be watching out for in general. So retention policies, to me, it's in a sense, it's more of a process issue. But, and we all know how law firms like to hold on to their data rather than getting rid of the data. But it's a really important issue if they don't destroy data when they no longer need it. I have two good examples of that. One example is that if a firm has a client engagement agreement, and in the client engagement agreement, it says maybe something like 7 years after a matter is closed, we're going to either offer the file to the client or we're going to destroy the file. Well, if I'm the client and I'm reading that, to me, the file means the paper file as well as the electronic file. But I think there are a lot of law firms out there that are not thinking about that electronic file. They're only thinking about the paper file. And down the road, should there be some sort of a breach, if they still have that data in their possession, then they might have breach notification issues. So I completely understand why people want to hold on to that data, but it's really important to make sure that if you are going to hold on to some of it, you can maybe de-identify some of it and put it into a knowledge management system or something like that. And then the other aspect of retention policies that I've seen in the field myself is retention of email. And a lot of firms try and encourage people to migrate the email into a better system than Outlook, migrate it into the document management system, for instance. And one of the reasons for this is, and this happens, sometimes a lawyer will leave a firm and go to another firm. Maybe that lawyer is going to take some clients, maybe some of the clients are going to stay. But either way, if that lawyer wasn't putting email messages into another platform besides Outlook, then that leaves the firm with a lot of data that might be important for cases that's still in that person's mailbox. And now somebody's going to have to take billable time and go through all of that information. And worst case scenario, if that person wasn't organized and didn't create folders within Outlook, you might have a mailbox that has 450,000 items just in the inbox. Then that is essentially, that was always my worst nightmare when I worked at my law firm. So one of the things to do to prevent these things is just to make sure that you're looking at your processes from start to finish and make sure that you are, you know, based on your client engagement agreement, that you're carrying that all the way through from matter start to matter end, and look at that entire process and make sure that you have procedures built in around that. And the same thing with onboarding and offboarding people and managing their email.
Awesome, Rebecca. That's great advice. So attention to records management can help you reduce cyber risk. I think can't emphasize that enough. I hate it when I end up with a 25 gigabyte PST. Thank you so much. Moving on to Robinson Roca from Heliant. Mr. Roca.
Hi, all. I get to bring to this conversation a little bit more of the technical side of the world, being the practice lead for network security, network and security infrastructure at Heliant. One of the things I see often is network segmentation, or at least poor network segmentation. I find myself sometimes in environments where customers have a network where phones and servers and workstations and sometimes IoT, Internet of Things devices, are sitting on one VLAN, and that VLAN being an environment where all devices can see and talk to each other as if they were plugged into the same infrastructure. That can be a problem. When you start to mix things together that have different access, for example, direct access to the internet where they can potentially be infected, you're now creating a conduit for outside bad actors to potentially have access to the entire network infrastructure. So one of the things that, you know, I run into pretty often is having to implement what's called a DMZ, a demilitarized zone for network security. So things that have direct internet access, like a web server, or something that allows outside counsel or even customers to access, or clients to access, these systems directly, we want to put them into a DMZ where only the user or the outside user can hit it directly. And then internally, you'd have to be permitted to communicate with internal systems. It kind of creates this almost like an air gap between the secured environment and the insecure environment. But on top of that, we also want to make sure that our phones aren't on the same network with our servers, and our desktops aren't on the same networks with the phones and guest users. So network segmentation is a big piece of the conversation. It's something we really, really want to ensure has been implemented in an environment. But if you guys don't mind, I have about a minute left. I want to make sure that I bring the listeners something a little new. A little new content. I recently came across a new customer, and this new customer, it wants to get their network redone. And as I was going through an assessment, I discovered that every single one of their network switches had a cut cable in port one. And I asked the customer, I said, hey, why are these cut cables here? And they didn't know why. And then all of a sudden, after my visit, of course, these switches decided to reboot themselves over and over and over and over. And I didn't understand why, and the customer didn't understand why. So when I went back in to figure out what was happening, I discovered that the cables that were cut were making contact with each other. So I came back to the same question. I resolved the problem, of course. I removed all the cut cables and the rebooting stopped. And I came back to the same question. I said, why were these cables here? So the customer was forced to go back to their original MSP, and the MSP said, oh, well, I put them there as a placeholder so no one would use those ports. I say all this because there is another common worst security practice, and that is, although many of us rely on your MSP to be the intelligent partner, the person that can give you the insight to things that you may not have the budget to support that yourself, sometimes a little oversight is helpful. Just because you trust the partner doesn't mean that you have to put all of your eggs within that partner. Ask questions. Ask why this is like that. Sometimes common sense trumps all else. And in this particular case, a cut wire in a network switch doesn't always really pay off. I suggested to the customer, if that port really does need to be, you know, isolated from everything else and shown to not be used, put a piece of tape over it, or actually go out and buy a little piece of plastic that goes into that port instead of using a cut cable. So the idea here is to ensure that, one, you have your network segmentation that keeps all your systems segregated from each other, and at the same time, always question, always be curious, always wonder if your trusted partner is doing right by you. And there's nothing wrong with checking up on that. It's part of your due diligence.
Great advice, Robinson. It's always good to get a second or third opinion, especially when we're talking about cybersecurity. What a great example you shared with us today. Appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Moving on to Ms. Morrow, Heather Morrow from Loeb & Loeb. What would you like to share with us today?
Thanks, Corey. I would like to share a worst practice of assuming people will think about and follow security policies when they make decisions. We have to recognize and understand where the gaps are happening with that. We have to help the staff learn to prioritize security over being nice. We have to recognize that, you know, they're not just getting the job done. You know, they're putting us at risk when they click on things, and communicating regularly with staff and management about the security risks. All employees have to understand where we are at risk for the firm. The nice thing about this is attorneys really do understand risk, but it's getting them beyond the legal risk to the security risk, to that understanding. So putting a plan, we've all talked about kind of having a whole program. It's not just one piece. You can't just patch because you patch, but somebody else clicks. You can't just network segment because the next person comes along and doesn't do it right or something else happens. You have to kind of have a whole thing pulled together, a whole program pulled together here. So definitely, you know, keeping on the education, regular training on cybersecurity. For my firm, we do phishing monthly, and that's helped significantly. I always am rewarded when an attorney forwards me an email and says, this looks suspicious, should I click? Of course, I have to explain to him our policy is to forward it to somebody else, but at least I'm making an impact, right? So definitely, you know, being strong about your policies and being clear on them, reinforcing them, don't go away from your line, making exceptions. I think that really degrades a policy. So really, you know, holding that line, making sure your firm does stay secure. Thank you.
Thanks, Heather. I think it's a great reminder that cyber is really everyone's responsibility. I love that you brought up a little bit about the problem of managing by exception, and hopefully all of us can do a little bit better about holding our policies up and really enforcing those. Thank you all for all of your contributions today. I have at least 7 or 8 things listed here that I want to check on where I work. And I want to thank our audience for tuning into today's podcast, and really a special thanks again to each of our panelists for sharing your expertise and knowledge with us today. Have a wonderful day, everyone. Take care.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio. Get tuned in.